This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, advice for preparing your finances in the event of disability or death. But first, when a child gets a head injury, it's not only frightening for the parents, it can be challenging for doctors to diagnose whether it's a concussion. Parents should know the signs, when to seek treatment, and how much time a child needs for a full recovery. And new research finds that recovery can take even longer for girls. Meantime, athletes in several local schools are trying out a new device that helps protect the brain during a head impact. Here to discuss concussion research, prevention, and recovery are TriHealth sports medicine specialist Dr. Emily Dixon and Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Director of Sports Medicine Research Dr. Greg Meyer. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dr. Dixon, good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Meyer, good afternoon. Thank you for being here as well.
Good afternoon to you. Thanks for having us.
So start off by explaining, what is a concussion?
Well, I think I would defer to Dr. Dixon on that. She's going to have the better definition for you.
So a concussion has been recently defined as a mild traumatic brain injury. So I try to break that down for patients and parents, that it's basically your brain is sitting in a bowl of fluid in the skull and the brain gets sloshed around. And it's a functional disruption rather than a structural. So by that, I mean, if we get a CT scan or if we get an MRI, it's going to be normal. But the function of the brain is trying to recover. Just like you sprained your knee, you've sprained your brain, and it can take a while for it to heal. And that healing process can be different for every single patient.
So is it a chemical change that the MRI is picking up or the CT scan is picking up? Is that what it is?
So an MRI and a CT scan, a basic MRI and a basic CT scan will always be normal in a concussion. If you really want to see the pathology and the microprocesses of a concussion, you have to get something called a functional MRI, which is a completely different, which is mainly used in research at this point. We're not really using those clinically at this point.
Is that why it's tough to diagnose a concussion?
Very much so, because a concussion is based on history and what we call mainly subjective findings. So it can affect balance. It can affect your vision. It can affect cognition. So your mood, how you're thinking, I feel foggy or I have fuzzy. I'm having problems finding my words. We get a lot of complaints of headache, obviously nausea. And most of the time you can walk in the room and look at an athlete and just know they feel terrible.
What are some of the other signs of concussion?
Well, again, as Dr. Dixon mentioned, it is very difficult to diagnose a concussion. So from a research side, We're interested in concussions, but we're more interested in protecting the brain from every head impact, even those subclinical or those hits that might not represent symptoms or some of the things that she mentioned. So we are using advanced technologies with our research to look at the structure and functions of the brain. So Dr. Dixon mentioned fMRI, and what that does is we look at the response or the hemodynamics of blood and metabolism in response to certain tasks and cognitive tasks. And that's one way we look at how the brain functions. And then more importantly, we look at the structure of the brain, and we look at, there's a technology called diffusion tensor imaging, which is a MRI technique where we can look at the structure of the brain and any changes that might occur from a head impact. And as I mentioned, from a research perspective, we really have to raise the bar, and we can't use a diagnosis of concussion because that's rather subjective. So we're looking at every head impact and trying to protect the brain in that regard.
And Dr. Dixon, the symptoms of a concussion, do they usually show up right away, or does it take some time for them to develop?
So yes and no. I mean, often we'll see, if you're on the sideline of a game, you can see someone who takes a really big hit and immediately they're dazed. And a lot of coaches will say, oh, they got rocked. Can you check them out? But occasionally it can take 24 to 48 hours or longer before those symptoms pop up. And that's what's so difficult about it, because you could take an athlete to the emergency room. They can get cleared and say, no, you don't have a concussion. And then they wake up Sunday morning and they feel terrible. So it's the brain is kind of the black box, right? It's a mystery. So that's why it's so, we know that neurochemical, neurotransmitter dysfunction of the brain can be affected, and sometimes it's not an immediate.
So what is the problem? If you don't get the concussion diagnosed soon enough, say you're a young athlete and then you go back out on the field and you keep playing, what's the danger of that? What's the risk of that?
The scariest thing that can happen is something called second impact syndrome, and that is basically where your brain has not healed from the concussion and you have a second impact, and then it's devastating. The brain essentially swells and your brain herniates out of the skull, and it's an instant death, and there's really nothing that can be done to prevent it. So that's the
But that's pretty rare.
It's very rare. However, that's why we are so cautious. And we know now, as these great studies that are coming out with the functional MRIs and these great neurochemical studies that are coming out, we know now that it takes longer than we initially thought for the concussion to heal. A recent study even came out that showed 3 months after a head injury, when patients have been completely cleared or are symptom-free, the functional MRI may still show changes. And we don't know exactly what that means, because I know that if I break my arm 3 months later, I'm still going to have physiological metabolic processes going on in the bone, healing the bone, but I may not have pain. So this is where all these studies that they're doing at Children's Hospital and across the country are really so important, because it's going to help us on the long term of how long do we hold athletes out, and what's the best way to get them back doing the sport that they love.
So it's all about understanding concussions better than we do at this point.
Yeah, it's understanding the whole dynamics of brain health. And Dr. Dixon really said it nicely, is when we have an injury to a structure, when we look at a bone, we can watch it heal and see it go to that prevent or that protection and come back to normal. We see similar things in the brain when we track kids over time. The structures come back to normal. But the concern is, if you keep having those, let's say it's a cut on the brain and it heals and it heals and it heals, well, eventually you leave a scar. And that's what we're concerned about. So what we're really focused on with our research is preventing it from the first place, to protect that brain so that we don't see any of those changes, and then keeping all kids healthy and active in sports. And that's our big mission.
Yeah, we'll definitely want to talk about prevention as we go along. Dr. Dixon, is it a case of the longer you wait before treating a concussion, the more harmful it can be?
Definitely. I think the biggest thing is early intervention and early diagnosis can help us get the proper physical and cognitive rest that the brain needs to heal. But also sometimes, about 50 to 60% of the time, something called the vestibular ocular motor system can be affected. And that's our eyes and our balance system and our muscles and our brain all working together to help control dizziness, blurred vision, feeling like I'm going to fall over, driving, even seeing the lights coming at you when you're driving. So we know that if we have early intervention with physical therapy focused at that VOMS, or vestibular ocular motor system, patients who go into that therapy quicker get better faster, and can help with those symptoms get better. Today, the world, we live on computers, we live on screens, on our smartphones, and that is incredibly aggravating to someone who's hit their head. So we know if we intervene quickly and get people the proper physical rest and cognitive rest. So for my students, return to academics to me is just as important as the return to sport. So the student athlete, the student part is just as important to me as the athlete part. So, and then when it comes to patients who are going back to work too, this is all things that can affect their job. So getting the early diagnosis, early intervention is key to helping long-term recovery too. So those cognitive effects, the thinking processes, the fuzzy feeling often will last longer than the physical symptoms of the headache. So really kind of getting in there quickly and making those diagnoses make a big difference.
I might add to that, again, the idea she mentioned, the driving, and we talk about kids getting back to sport, but we're okay with putting them in a 4,000-pound tank and letting them drive 60 miles an hour often before we'll let them return back to sport.
When they're dizzy and their balance is off.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why we need even more research. We talk about return to sport, but we even need to know, when is it okay to let them drive? Because that's even more dangerous potentially.
Is there a standard immediate treatment when a concussion is diagnosed? What do you tell a patient that they're going to
have to do? So when a patient comes into me, the first thing that we do is we get a symptom score, and then we also do various balance testing and neurocognitive exams in clinic. And that's something that I tend to do almost every time I see them, so I can track that and see that they're improving. Timmy gets injured on Friday night, I'm seeing him Monday, the first thing I recommend is that 24 hours, 72 hours of kind of physical, just chill out. So no screens, just rest. We don't have to wake them up every 30 minutes like we used to say to make sure they are awake, but just letting them rest, and then addressing their school and driving. So you can't drive, you may need to be able to go to school, but they may become symptomatic after a couple hours and may have to see the school nurse or go home even. And then just making sure having that definitive diagnosis. And then I like to monitor my concussed patients fairly often. So it's not something I'm going to see you back in a month. I'm going to monitor them weekly. And even the nice thing about having the support system of athletic trainers in schools is they can every day at their school go see their athletic trainer, get those symptom scores, check in to see how they're feeling, and I get those progress reports back. So that partnership really helps me because then I know how they're progressing.
And so in the case of a young athlete, is it better just to err on the side of caution and just take as much time as they need to get back into the
game? Yeah. Always. And then some of it, too, is discussing risk of the sports that they're doing. So often, even on the sidelines, I can watch maybe there's an outside linebacker who has a very physical style of play who's leading with his head when he tackles. And those are all things where coaching and some of the laws that have been made with football and other sports have really kind of helped decrease that incidence of those major impact injuries. So there are certain things that sometimes I talk to parents and patients about, like if a soccer player, I always like to slide tackle, well, maybe not taking diving headers, not slide tackling to see if we can protect the head a little bit more.
And Ohio has a concussion law, correct, that stipulates?
That's correct. And I think we also have to think about the other dark side of this. Even though there's a lot of media and fears about concussion, with people like Dr. Dixon and our other physicians and athletic trainers, the brain health of kids playing sports is far better now than it's ever been. So for us, we're seeing more of it, and she can talk more about how we're identifying it and identifying head injury and managing it more. So it looks like there's more cases, but ultimately the opportunities for kids to play safe is far beyond where it used to be. And we know that the real killer of kids is physical inactivity. So we have to have a balance of concerns with concussion and the risk of not doing sports at all.
I completely second that. I think you learn so much more about teamwork, about being healthy, about how to be a leader. And every student athlete will tell you that they get so much out of playing that sport. And I think that's something we struggle with, too. If you have a patient whose their whole identity is an athlete, and then you take that athletic activity away from them, how do we feed that energy into something that's productive? Because I have, I've had patients who have had, quote, too many concussions. There's no magic number. But when they've had multiple concussions and then now subsequently they're taking a really long time to heal and it's causing a long-term damage, that's when we have to have the conversation. Maybe you should focus on golf or running, something that's not as high risk. And also, how do we take that athlete who's used to playing soccer or football or lacrosse and get them into something that's going to get that energy out and help them still identify as an athlete? Otherwise, we get high rates of depression, anxiety, and other things that can affect an athlete.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Here to discuss concussion research, prevention, and recovery are TriHealth Sports Medicine Specialist Dr. Emily Dixon and Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Director of Sports Medicine Research, Dr. Greg Meyer. You can join us, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Derek joins us now. And kind of going back to the topic we were touching on right before the break. Derek, go ahead.
Well, yeah, in particular, the issue of chronic traumatic encephalopathy with adult athletes, football players. Can you comment on the repetitive head injuries that may not rise to the level of a concussion that may be subsyndromal, and the accumulation of those? And maybe it is a Faustian bargain that they're getting their exercise, but they're paying for it a few decades down the road. Yeah. If there is increasing evidence of that, at what point will the medical community come out and say we have to kind of limit these contact sports, or the legal community say that this could be a form of child abuse to allow students to participate in these sports?
Wow, that's a strong statement there. Well, I'll comment on the studies coming out of Boston University first, because that's your first question. And if you're familiar with those studies, they're reporting very high rates of chronic traumatic encephalopathy in their study participants. If you look at the sampling on that cohort, what they've done is they have those who have issues, who played NFL football, and they have other neurodegenerative issues. Often they have concerns. Those athletes are donating their brains to this group for science. So the sampling on that is not fully there, but again, it's certainly some evidence that we have to move forward on. But for those studies to be completely set forth, we need to also sample randomly from the NFL football players to get a relative proportion of those, of that incidence in the NFL. And then we also need to compare it to the normal numbers that we see in the general population. Then we can start to determine what are some of the cases on that. Emily, do you want to add to that?
Yeah,
and is there a gradual effect? I mean, you might not have a concussion, but is there kind of a, if you play a game where you have a lot of head impact, even if it doesn't lead to concussions, can that cause you problems down the road?
So by definition, CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, is repetitive subconcussive blows. So the biggest thing about it is that they're saying it's not even just multiple concussions. It's just the overall impact over and over and over again. And so, you know, a lot of the research that Dr. Myers is doing and stuff is to help prevent that is really important for the future. But to diagnose CTE currently, they're working on some new blood tests and lumbar punctures and so on and so forth. You have to biopsy the brain. And I don't think we can biopsy the brain in a young student athlete. That would be obviously not wise. So the biggest thing with this is, again, it's that balance. I do see patients with concussions who've had two or three, and their first one, they took 6 weeks to come back from, their second one, a week, and then their third one could take 6 months. So everyone recovers differently. So when it comes to playing the sports, like I said, they've shown, especially with female athletes, that if you play sports, you're much less likely to be a victim of sexual abuse. You're much less likely to use drugs or alcohol, much less likely to be sexually active at a younger age. And with boys, too, it's the leadership and the team building that you get. I think you get a lot of humility from playing sports and working with a team and realizing you're not the brightest star in the world. There are other people out there who you need to support and build up, too. But I do think a lot of the ways, some of the legislative processes that have been going on to protect our student athletes and our professional athletes are going the right direction to help prevent some of these injuries, whether it's special teams and making the kickoffs so they can't run as far and hit as hard and as fast. You know, the FIFA has just recommended now for soccer not taking head balls until, you know, age 11 or older. So there are a lot of things that are coming down the pipeline that are to protect our athletes. But at this point, I still do believe that the benefits of athletics outweigh the risk. However, if you have an athlete that's had multiple head injuries, that's really when you need to have that tough tough conversation with the parents and the athlete. How do we make you safer? What do we do to protect you for the future?
Like you're saying, take up a sport where you don't have the same risk of head impact.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of times I play it to my patients that I'm not just thinking of you now. I'm thinking of your brain 50 years from now. And how is that going to affect? And unfortunately, for a lot of this, you need 40, 50-year-long studies to really show that effect. And I really think that the way the research is going, we're going to have that information. But it may be 20 years before we have a clear idea of exactly how these rules are affecting the brain.
I wonder if either of you can comment on the research, too, that just – I think it just came out recently that – and of course, they've been working on this for some years now, but girls are more susceptible to head injuries and can take longer to heal than boys. I just wondered what your comments were on that particular research.
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, that's something that I've been seeing in my patients for a long time. We know that there's a lot of things that can affect and prolong the healing time of concussion. So if you have a past medical history of headache disorder or migraines or a sleep disorder, ADHD, ADD, anxiety, you know, any sort of other psychiatric illness, we know that that will prolong your healing time with a concussion. So we do know that females can take a little bit longer to heal, but they also have a higher rate of migraine disorder, perimenstrual migraines. They've shown that if the injury, whether this is an ACL injury or a concussion injury, we know that sometimes the menstrual cycle and the hormones can affect that. So this most recent study just kind of put into numbers exactly, I think, most of us concussion providers have seen for years, and that's a conversation I often have with my female athletes, that it could take us a little bit longer to heal from this.
And we might also have differences in how they report and things like that. Some of our neuroimaging data is we're not seeing larger increases, even less in girls soccer players and football players and their neuroradiological measures. As Dr. Dixon mentioned, the hormonal aspect can change cerebral vascular blood flow and blood volume in the intracranial space, so in their head. So, and that's the mechanism or the way we're looking at injury prevention. So there may be differences in girls in that regard. But certainly we're very interested in helping the female athlete as well.
And this is a phenomenon we see across all areas, not just concussion. I mean, we see females have higher rates of hypertension, diabetes. Well, we also know that females tend to go to the doctor more than men just in general. So sometimes we see that kind of bias come across other studies.
Bob joins us now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I had seen a story about new tech helmet technology. I'm not sure how valid it is, but the main thing this guy was doing was creating a helmet that had more a bubble kind of feel to it, and totally different from the normal hard shell helmet. Have you seen anything like that? And is there any more technology advancements in that regard?
Well, that's certainly a great question, and I'll take that one. The helmets are the most obvious solution that everyone's looking for, and I always tell people that it doesn't make any sense from a physics perspective to expect that adding another shell to an existing shell, which is our skull, will help reduce that movement of the brain inside the skull. So the physics don't add up, and so I think that's one thing to consider. What they're also doing, you might be talking about the Vixis helmets, which that's one that's now emerging in the NFL, and then I think you're probably referring to I read an article a couple of weeks ago about a guy that's making a collapsible shell helmet. And again, the whole head with when it's attached to the helmet is it's still one set of mass, and the forces will still transfer and move that and slosh that brain in an equivalent manner. And my concern with the collapsible helmets, in theory, that would make sense if you had a big enough structure to absorb the forces and stop them before they get to the head. But that's not what happens. And collapsible helmets almost capture the forces. A helmet that is collapsing will actually pull the other helmet into it and reduce those forces into a point that goes into the head. Where harder shell helmets, while they're not the solution, they tend to deflect energies away from the head or ricochet off. So I did read that story, and I think that, again, we don't think that helmets, they do have a role. They help protect the brain from skull fractures and superficial injuries. But for protecting the brain on the inside, it's just not going to work.
And Dr. Meyer, what's the other new device I've heard about, too? The Q-Collar, I believe it's called.
Yeah, so we're working on a way to protect the brain from the inside. Again, this idea, I wish I could say these were my ideas, but come from a researcher, Dr. David Smith, and he was studying woodpeckers, and he wanted to know why they could protect their brain. And so what he found is they have a long tongue that wraps around both sides of their neck, and when they're throwing that tongue out to feel for the insects in the tree, it was actually closing down the blood flow out of their brain. And now we don't know if that's how they protect themselves, but that gave him the idea of developing this collar for humans. And so what we're doing now is it's a device that fits on the neck that it slows the blood flow out of the brain. So the carotid artery is the blood coming in. We put a kink in the hose coming out, the blood coming out. And what that does is it makes an immediate backfill, and it fills up the blood volume in the brain space. And we call that an airbag for the brain.
Matt joins us now. Hi, Matt.
Hi, good afternoon.
Go right ahead, Matt.
Hi, panel. My name is Matt Jennings. I'm the head strength coach at Xavier University, and my question regards the strength training of the head and neck, the musculature of the head and neck for injury prevention for concussions. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that as well.
Hi, Matt. I certainly think, there have been some studies that show that by strengthening the posterior chain of the neck specifically and some of the anterior structures that can help decrease the force and help absorb a little bit of that shock that Dr. Meyer was kind of mentioning. However, so that certainly I think is very beneficial, especially today as we see so many kids who have what I call tech's neck, where they're always in a forward slumped posture and they have a very poor back muscles and posterior chain muscles. However, it still does not fix the fact that our brain is sitting in a bowl of fluid. So like I tell people, your brain is kind of like a yolk of an egg. And in a concussion, the yolk gets shooken up, but the shell doesn't break. So we still have that issue that we can't fix, that our brain is sitting in a bowl of fluid. But certainly working on posture, strengthening of that can help decrease the force going to the brain. But studies have shown that it will not prevent a concussion.
Yeah, Matt, I can add to that. I think there's a study out of Nationwide Children's where they did look at that. And they did find a little bit of reduction and can reported concussions in those with a stronger neck. But the idea of muscle strength, that requires recruitment, and that would require us being able to see every hit that's coming. And so that recruitment can't always happen, and that's probably why we're not seeing a real strong effect. But that said, I think that there's no loss of doing the neck strengthening exercise. I think it's going to have some protective effect. It might even reduce that kind of the bullwhip effect, meaning the end of the whip. If you have more mass holding the head to the body, it might reduce that. So certainly we want to be physically prepared for the sports we're playing, but we're not seeing a lot of strong evidence that it's going to be preventing concussions or brain alterations from head impacts.
Dr. Meyer, do we have any idea how effective this new collar is?
Yeah, so we've been lucky to study this new collar in Cincinnati, and I think we probably should start out by thanking people like Dr. Dixon. She's one of the physicians that gave us the okay to do this with a partner school in Cincinnati, and you can imagine the idea of talking to parents that we want to change the blood flow in their kids' heads and send them out and play sports.
I can imagine the student athletes go, what?
Those are some difficult.
You want to cut off the circulation to my head a little bit?
Those are some difficult conversations. Yeah. And getting approval from multiple levels. So we have to thank the partnerships with a lot of the area sports medicine teams like Dr. Dixon and an area. And then working with St. Xavier High School, we've worked with Seton High School, we've worked with Madeira and Moeller High Schools. So those are schools that are willing to do this. And so we've had some very positive results, and we have some athletes now that have worn this collar for three consecutive seasons. So we're looking at both the safety and the efficacy of this first, and I think that's an important point. This isn't something we built in our garage and threw on kids the next day. This had a lot of years of research in our laboratory, in the human performance laboratory, before we even got on the first athlete on the field. And I think that's a key aspect to consider.
Dr. Dixon and Dr. Meyer, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
TriHealth Sports Medicine Specialist Dr. Emily Dixon and Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Director of Sports Medicine Research Dr. Greg Meyer.